We've been telling you the bullying is backfiring. Now we've got more proof.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
I am glad to tell you I told you so. Oh, I know the saying, I hate to say I told you so. No, but I'm glad to say I told you so. Michael Brown, welcome to The Line of Fire, 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. Do you remember when gay activists called for a boycott of Chick-fil-A because the head of the company, Dan Cathy, stood for marriage as God intended it, and had an organization under Chick-fil-A that had donated some money to conservative Christian groups. And there was a call for the boycotting of Chick-fil-A, and former Governor Mike Huckabee called for a Chick-fil-A day instead. And what happened? There were lines of people standing outside waiting to get in. I remember going there with my grandkids that particular day, and it was kind of a joyous thing. It was not a celebration of hate or discrimination. It was a celebration of freedom and a celebration of biblical values. And then, do you remember what happened with Phil Robertson, Duck Dynasty? And he made comments. Yeah, he said them in different ways than I would, just focusing on the issues of marriage and sexuality and homosexuality. Phil Robertson made the comments in different terms than I would have made the comments, but he did speak biblically true things. As a result of that, A&E suspended him, and what was it, 9 days later, brought him back because of the outcry. Cracker Barrel made an even worse mistake, completely misjudging their clientele, as A&E misjudged the viewers of Duck Dynasty. Remember, this was not Glee or Will and Grace or some MTV reality TV show. This was Duck Dynasty. Cracker Barrel pulled all of the items having to do with Duck Dynasty or Duck Commander, whatever it is, from their stores. And immediately, when the outcry was great, this is Cracker Barrel, come on. They issued an apology. We misjudged our clientele. We wanted to be sensitive. We ended up being insensitive. Paraphrasing, you know, we made a mistake. Yep. Well, it's happened again. It's happened again. We have been on the front lines of the situation in Houston, of the bullying and intimidating of five Houston pastors, where subpoenas were sent out demanding that they turn over all sermons, speeches, presentations, communications, emails to their congregants having to do with gender identity or homosexuality, or Mayor Anise Parker, the lesbian activist mayor of Houston, or related issues. Of course, this was rightly branded a witch hunt, an inquisition. You had the Attorney General of Texas saying, whether you intend it to be so or not, your action is a direct assault on the religious liberty guaranteed by the First Amendment. Senator Ted Cruz called the mayor's actions both shocking and shameful, and a litany of others, legal authorities and others, weighed in, saying to Mayor Parker and City Attorney David Feldman, you did the wrong thing. Well, what happens? This coming Sunday, I Stand Sunday. Find out about that by going to istandsunday.com. Mike Huckabee and Phil Robertson and others, my friends, the Benham Brothers, will be speaking at a national event saying, when you mess with Texas pulpits, you mess with all of our pulpits. Well, Mayor Parker announced today that she is removing the subpoenas against the pastors. Not because they're in any way illegal or intended to intrude on religious liberty, just because they weren't serving the city of Houston. That's what I call too little, too late. The good news is, though, the bullying is backfiring. Here's the big question if you're a follower of Jesus. How do you stand for what's right, stand for what you believe, stand for marriage and family, without completely ostracizing those who identify as LGBT? Can you do both? We'll be right back.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks for joining us today on The Line of Fire broadcast, 866-34-TRUTH. How do we stand for righteousness without alienating people we differ with? Let's look at another category. I am not comparing gay activists with Islamic terrorists. May I say that again? I am not comparing gay activists with Islamic terrorists. The thought is nowhere in my heart or mind. Okay? I'm simply talking about a different situation now. But a parallel situation in terms of how do you speak out against something you believe is wrong without alienating many other people? Can you do both? So let's take radical Islam, which I'm not comparing with gay activism. Clear enough? We speak out against radical Islam regularly. We show how radical Islam uses texts from the Quran and Islamic tradition to justify its murderous actions. We renounce these things. We speak out against them. We put posts on Facebook that address them. I write articles that address them. At the same time, I want to reach Muslims with the gospel. Yeah, I want to reach radical Muslims, but I recognize the great majority of Muslims worldwide would not be called radical. Some would say, well, they're not true Muslims if they're not radical. Others would say it's the radicals who aren't true Muslims. That's a debate and discussion to have. But how do we stand against what is wrong while building relationships with Muslims, with Muslim neighbors, seeking to reach out through social media and other means? Can we do both? Now we switch subjects. Now we talk about the issue of reaching those who identify as LGBT with the gospel and at the same time standing against the activism. Once more, I am not comparing gay activists to Muslim terrorists. All right? Now, I've had gay activists compare conservative Christians with Muslim terrorists. And there are groups that are really hate groups themselves while they try to brand other groups, like the SPLC, which is exporting hatred and lies and disseminating falsehoods against conservative Christians and putting us in the same class as other terrorists and radicals to their what will be their lasting shame, ultimately. But I have for years had a mandate from the Lord, reach out and resist. Reach out to LGBT people with compassion, resist the agenda with courage. I understand the vast majority of gays and lesbians are not activists. They may share the goals of the activists or affirm the words of the activists. Some would not, but the majority would. But they themselves are not activists. They themselves are just seeking to live their lives. They themselves are just saying, hey, live and let live. You live your life without fear. Let me live my life without fear. You have your relationships without fear. Let me have my relationship without fear. You can marry the person of your choice. I'd like to marry the person of my choice. You can adopt and raise kids. I'd like to be able to adopt and raise kids. You don't get discriminated on your job because of your sexual orientation or gender identity. I'd like the same thing. I understand that. I understand that loud and clear. That's their perspective. So when I oppose the activism, when I talk about the bullying is backfiring, when I talk about all of these critical issues and expose them, and here's what's happening in the schools, and here's what your kids are being taught, and on and on and on, and expose the intolerance of those calling for tolerance, expose the exclusivity of those calling for inclusion and diversity. When I do that, obviously, I'm going to be branded a hater. I'm going to be branded a bigot. That's just the rhetoric. That's just the perception. And some genuinely believe that because they say, why do you hate me? It has nothing to do with hatred. It has to do with morality. It has to do with biblical convictions. It has to do with larger social issues. But can we do both? Can we speak out against the error while at the same time with compassion reaching out to those who don't know the Lord or those who do know the Lord and are struggling or those who know the Lord and have a wrong theology? Can we do both. 866-34-TRUTH. We've invited Pastor Carl Lenz from Hillsong to join us on the air a couple of times now without success. And I appreciate the No Other Name, the Jesus campaign, right in the heart of Times Square, and boom, there it is. And not even taking credit for it, saying it's our church or it's Hillsong or our organization, and proclaiming Jesus, No Other Name, Jesus, and just sending that message out must have cost a whole lot of money to do that. And I appreciate young people who might not go somewhere else, who have been turned off to what they think of as traditional religion, and something about the Hillsong atmosphere draws them in. And of course, the worship songs over the years from Hillsong in Australia and now around the world have powerfully touched so many of us. I've been touched by the Lord's presence singing those songs. And obviously, you have to be, somebody's got to be rightly connected to God to put out on a consistent level powerful gospel songs and songs that exalt Jesus. So I'm appreciative for all the good that Hillsong's done in different nations and right in New York City. I wrote to Pastor Lenz back in June, and we got an email connection, how to get it to him and the pastoral staff. I wrote a letter. If you want to read it, when we never got a response after over 4 months, I finally printed the letter. And you'll see there's nothing nasty, mean-spirited in the letter, but again, I'm just releasing what I wrote, so that's perfectly appropriate. Go to my website, Ask Dr. Brown, A-S-K-D-R Brown, and click on Latest Blog, and you'll see it. If you just scroll down a little, you'll see it as Latest Blog. But he was on he was on national TV. I forget if it was CNN or with Katie Couric or whatever, but he was on national TV and was asked quite forthrightly about his views on homosexuality and other things, and he just made it clear it's a discussion we're not going to have here on TV, and we do address it, but just not the way that you like. And then he made some very wrong statements about Jesus, that Jesus was in a society where this was a big issue, homosexuality, and he never addressed it, so Carl Lenz wasn't going to in a public setting. So when I wrote to him, I corrected those errors, because he said, somebody show me, and if you can show me, just because I don't see it. So in the letter, I do show him. And if anyone from Hillsong's listening, hey, I'd love to interact with Pastor Carl. That's where I wrote 4 months ago. That's where I invited him on the air, if you wanted to talk publicly rather than privately. But I'm sure I can be of help, because the word really is clear. And if you say it's not, well, we can help you then. I'm sure you can help me in many ways. I can help you in these ways. So I pointed out how, first, in Jewish culture, this was hardly an issue. Homosexual practice was roundly condemned in the Jewish literature of the day. And in Jewish culture, it was considered, especially male, to be one of the most grievous offenses. And on top of that, in three different ways, Jesus addresses it, as I pointed out when Piers Morgan gave me the same challenge. Jesus said he didn't come to abolish the law, but to fulfill. What does he do with the moral requirements of the law? He takes them to a higher level. So instead of adultery just being the physical act, it can also be adultery in the heart. Instead of murder just being an outward act, it'd be hatred in the heart. So that would then also apply to other aspects of sexual sin. In Matthew 15, he says that all sexual acts outside of wedlock, it's sexual immorality in the plural, all sexual acts outside of wedlock defile us. And then in Matthew, the 19th chapter, he reaffirms that marriage is the union of one man and one woman for life. So in those three different ways, he's addressing these issues, which were hardly prevalent in Jewish culture in his day. Yes, in Greek culture and some Roman culture, but hardly in Jewish culture. But he still addresses these issues as directly as he needs to. He doesn't explicitly address a slave trade. He doesn't explicitly address wife beating. He doesn't explicitly address other things by name. That doesn't prove anything. The argument of silence falls short, but in fact, he does address these things. Well, I didn't realize this, but there was also an interview that was done on the web with Huffington Post. And when Pastor Lenz is asked quite directly what he would say to a gay couple, he made clear he was not going to address that publicly and that each situation would be different. But it's very, very clear. It's 100% clear that the interviewer has the impression that Pastor Lenz is speaking in an approving, affirming way, as opposed to saying the Bible makes it clear it's wrong. Now, thankfully, Pastor Brian Houston, after making a very controversial public comment about this again a couple weeks ago, immediately issued a clarification. He's the leader of Hillsong internationally, and therefore would be Carl Lentz's senior leader. He made a clear statement that they hold to the traditional view and that the writings of Paul are clear on this, and Pastor Lentz tweeted out exactly that's his viewpoint. So here's the problem. Pastor Lentz, apparently not wanting to drive people away, made comments that affect all of us in ministry. They affect all of us very negatively. They bring all kinds of confusion. They bring a wrong, unhelpful affirmation to people that need to be graciously called to repentance. But can you do both? 866-34-TRUTH. What do you think?
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back, friends, to The Line of Fire broadcast. Hey, another reminder for you. Let the lion roar. We've just got two more days after today that we'll be offering this special package. It is the Blu-ray disc, plus the DVD disc, plus the book, actually through Sunday online, but you can only call in for until Friday. So the Blu-ray disc, the DVD disc of the compelling docudrama, Let the Lion Roar, that will take you back through church history, talk about anti-Semitism in church history, talk about God's purposes for Israel. And it's the whole format will draw you right in. And it has well-known Christian actors and others that are on there playing certain roles. Kevin Sorbo, who will be back with us the second hour today. We got cut off our first interview last week. He plays John Calvin in the docudrama. So the DVD, the Blu-ray disc, the book, and then the interviews with Kevin Sorbo, with Paul Wilbur, with Jackie Velasquez, who's also on it, with others. The CDs, so these are exclusive interviews, everything packaged together at a great price, and it's a great holiday gift. So just go to my website, Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org, askdrbrown.org, and you'll see it right on the homepage. When you're there, click on a video. I had a fun time opening the box that the materials come in and doing a video on it, so you'll enjoy watching that as well. 866-34-TRUTH. I'm going to go to the phones in a moment. But I remember seeing a TV debate on CNN some years ago with different Christian leaders being challenged by CNN liberal, it could have been Larry King, I forget, and they were being asked about homosexual practice and how they felt. And there were some older Christian leaders, and they spoke very clearly, undeniably clearly. As they spoke, though, I thought, oh, are they speaking with sufficient compassion to reach out to those who are struggling or to those who think we really hate them? You know, I was listening. I was appreciating their stand, but I was thinking of how others would hear it. And then Pastor Brian McLaren was asked the question, and he said, you know, what hurts me is however I answer this, I'm going to offend someone on either side. You know, if I answer according to the clear teaching of Scripture, then that's going to offend gays and lesbians that I love and want to reach. If I answer in a way that is affirming to gays and lesbians, it's going to offend those who believe the Bible. Again, that's my paraphrase. That's my extended paraphrase. The problem, though, is that the Scriptures are not ambiguous on this. And to no one's surprise, or I should say to the surprise of very few, Brian McLaren has now altered his views and gone away from the authority of Scripture on this and found a reason or a justification to bless same-sex so-called marriages. So how do we hold the line of righteousness? Well, reaching out with compassion. To me, a lot of it is a matter of the heart. And if the heart is right, the words will be right and the spirit will be right. But still, even when the heart is right and the spirit's right, if we address social issues, there are people we want to reach. It's just like a political situation, that if I strongly stand for a certain issue in society and there's a candidate who represents that issue, and therefore I believe that candidate is the best one to vote for, I can alienate people on the other side of the political divide that I want to reach with the gospel. And again, things get inflamed. I'm going to give you one more example in a moment, but first to the phones. Hurley in Boston, Massachusetts, thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Oh, thank you for taking my call. My question is, would it be okay in God's eyes to someone to go to a homosexual ceremony and being a pastor, a pastor?
You're asking on behalf of the father, or you're saying that the father of one of the people involved is a pastor?
Exactly. He's a Christian pastor, and or in other words, if he goes, does that mean he is approving of it and he should not have a gun?
Yeah, okay. So everyone has to work this out between themselves and God. It's possible God sends someone in on a mission that looks wrong outwardly and that seems to be affirming, but there's a higher purpose, and it's to win people to Jesus. So God alone is the judge of this. However, I cannot possibly see doing it. When Nancy and I got married, we're Jewish believers in Jesus, 1976, we invited the local rabbi who had befriended me and then befriended Nancy, and he said, I can't go because it's not a Jewish wedding. He said if it was a Jewish wedding, he would go, even though we were followers of Jesus, but because it was a Christian ceremony, he could not go in good conscience. I fully respected him for that. He was simply being true to his views. So if I go to the ceremony, that means I am affirming. That means I am approving. That means I am celebrating with them. That means when they say, I now pronounce you husband and husband or wife and wife or whatever it is, and you may now kiss however it's going to be said, then I have to be sitting there. And to me, this would be no different than if I had a family member, this family member left a spouse. Mm-hmm. Let's say a family member married to my sister. And then my brother-in-law, and he divorces her without merit, and now he's going to remarry, and it's an adulterous affair that he was in. I can't go to that. I wouldn't go to that. So I would do everything I could. This just came up the other day. A woman asked, what about her sister? Her sister and another woman are, quote, getting married. What should she do? This just came up on Saturday. And I said I would reach out to the couple. I tell my sister, you're always my sister. That's never going to change. I would seek to go out and have a meal with them either before or after the, quote, wedding. But I could not go under any circumstances. To go would be to affirm and therefore wouldn't do it. And if you say, I just want to show that I love, there are other ways to show that you love. Now, again, this is an individual choice. Everyone has to answer to God, not to Mike Brown on this. But
yes, but I think exactly how you do. But it was actually a question on a program, a radio, a Brazilian radio Christian program yesterday. And my answer was, you know, someone that reads the Bible and goes, you know, in favor of what God wants us to do, I wouldn't go. I don't think it was the best to go.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, I just got to jump in. We're out of time, but I'm with you 100%. At the same time, I would do everything I knew to reach out with compassion to those involved. They might feel completely rejected. Hey, we've got to hold to what's right. Can't compromise that. Thanks for the call. All right, friends, remember to get Let the Lion Roar. You'll be getting it probably next week, so you have plenty of time for the holidays or to enjoy these on your own. Call 1-800-278-9978. 1-800-278-9978. All right, I'll say this really quickly. So I've said many times that reading books about struggles that professing gay Christians have gone through, I've put the book down and just wept. And I've shared that many times. People say, you're a liar. You're a liar. Why? Because they can't recognize that you don't affirm them, and yet you still hold to the truth.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back, friends, to the Line of Fire, your listener-sponsored voice of moral sanity and spiritual clarity in the midst of a society in chaos and a church all too often in compromise. There are things happening in our society that make no moral sense to me. They make no logical sense to me, such as telling a Christian group on campus that their leaders, they cannot say that the leaders have to be Christian. And some of these things happen when an offended gay student will say, well, you have policies, moral policies, and those moral policies offend me or go against my lifestyle, and therefore I'm going to challenge this. And you end up with ridiculous cases like in California that groups like InterVarsity are being told, if you want to be on our campus, this already happened at Vanderbilt and other schools, if you want to be on our campuses, then you must have a policy that anyone can lead your group. Not attend, not be a member, but lead the group, which would mean that you could have a Democratic group on campus and their policies have to say a Republican activist could lead it. Or you could have an atheist group and a religious Jew could lead that. And on it goes. I am joined now by Ed Whalen, who has weighed in on this subject and many, many others. He is the president of the Washington, D.C.-based Ethics and Public Policy Center, which describes itself as being, quote, dedicated to applying the Judeo-Christian moral tradition to critical issues of public policy. Ed, thanks so much for joining us on the broadcast today.
Thank you for having me.
Can you tell me if I'm misrepresenting these campus issues or misunderstanding them? Because they sound completely outlandish to me.
Well, they are outlandish unless you embrace the progressive ideology, which holds that in the name of diversity, all organizations need to be the same. For some reason, there's an insistence now that all of these groups on campus, if they're to receive the benefits of funding and other things, need to have the same rules across the board. And make no mistake, this is an effort to go after religious groups, especially Christian groups. No one thought about this, 10 years ago when they wanted. No one thought about saying Democratic groups couldn't have people who adhere to a Democratic tenets as their leaders. But right now, based in part on the Supreme Court decision from a few years ago, there's an effort really to extinguish these religious groups and say that you cannot hold to your own standards on who ought to be your leaders.
All right. So you say that these things clearly were attacks on Christians. Is it true that in some cases you had, say, a gay-identified student with a Christian group who didn't like the morality policy, and that's what triggered some of these cases?
I'm sure that's how the complaints get started in the first place. I'm not familiar with the details at various of these schools, but some sort of effort to either take over the group or to attack its standards is at the heart of this. I'll note as well that in California, fraternities and sororities apparently can still limit membership, not just leadership, but membership, by gender. So somehow it's recognized to be important to the core mission of a sorority that have only female members. I simply don't understand how it can't be recognized as part of the core mission of a religious group that it have people who adhere to its religious mission as its leaders.
Exactly so, and my opinion is the fraternities and sororities will soon be challenged over transgender issues and discrimination based on gender identity. We come back, just got a very quick break. Ed Whalen is my special guest for a few more minutes. Again, president of the Washington, D.C.-based Ethics and Public Policy Center. I want to talk about what's happened in Houston. I want to talk about the very real attack on religious freedom and freedom of conscience and speech in America today. We'll be right back.
God of light, hear our cry. Send the fire.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
I am joined by Ed Whalen, president of the Ethics and Public Policy Center based in Washington, D.C. Ed, before I ask you about what's happened in Houston and the attack on freedoms of religion and conscience now in America, what exactly does the Ethics and Public Policy Center do?
Well, we're a think tank. I have wonderful colleagues who are working in a whole range of areas, from Obamacare, my work on judges, the economy, family policy, to help promote what we think are the sort of sound policies needed to get this country back in the right direction.
And what do you make of the Supreme Court's non-decision to rule on the marriage amendment challenges that were presented to the court a couple weeks back after, in fact, last year they opened up the can of worms by overturning DOMA? What do you make of that as someone that focuses your attention on these kinds of issues?
Sure. Well, my own take on that is that the conservative justices concluded that they had no hope of getting Justice Kennedy on board, and that they figured that the least bad option for the time being was to let the bad lower court decisions remain rather than nationalizing them right away. There are more cases on the horizon. I think this issue will come up to the Supreme Court sooner rather than later, and given the read that the conservative justices evidently have, I'm not optimistic how that's going to go.
An interesting observation. We don't hear that point of view often discussed in public. Of course, what's happened in Houston now has gotten the attention of the country. We announced earlier that today Mayor Anise Parker said that she is dropping the subpoenas against the five pastors, but not because the requests were in any way illegal or intended to intrude on religious liberties, rather because they were not serving the city of Houston. Ed, that strikes me as somewhat of a cop-out response. Initially, she defended the subpoenas, and denied knowing about them, and now saying, well, they're being removed, but not because they were intended to intrude on religious freedom. It almost seems like too little, too late. What's your take on that whole situation and Mayor Parker's response?
Well, it is a cop-out. Her shifting statements throughout have never confronted the fact that there was never any basis for the subpoenas. There's nothing remotely related to the case that the subpoenas could ever have generated. The question there is whether the signatures on a voter petition were valid or not. That has nothing to do with whatever was said in some homily somewhere or in email messages from pastors. From the beginning, this is an effort to harass the Houston pastors and to basically chill their exercise of speech and religious liberty by telling them that they would be punished for exercising it. I think it's clear that's what happened, and it's good that the subpoenas are now being withdrawn in their entirety, but it's too bad the mayor isn't more contrite about what she has done.
Yeah, exactly so. Author Eric Metaxas, who wrote the best-selling New York Times best-selling book on Bonhoeffer, recently commented, "Never in our history has religious freedom been so brazenly defied. A bold red line has been crossed." And when he read about what was happening in Houston, he said, "I immediately thought this is right out of my Bonhoeffer book." Now, we are not comparing Mayor Parker to Nazis. We're not comparing gay activists or City Attorney David Feldman to Nazis. But in terms of an overt attack on religious freedoms, what the ADF called a witch hunt and an inquisition, do you think that we're making too much about these kind of cases and other related cases with businesses across the country? Is this a matter of conservative Christians sounding like Chicken Little, the sky's falling? Or should we be sounding the alarm and say, look, this is a real assault on our freedoms?
There is a huge clash between rival principles. On the one hand, traditional American principles of religious liberty, classical liberalism, celebration of civil society, a celebration of the sort of what sociologists call mediating institutions like the clubs we were talking about at the beginning of our talk. On the other side is this progressive ideology which tolerates other entities only so far as they serve the interests of the state. It's fundamentally hostile to any real understanding of religious liberty, and it is voracious. So this is the battle that we're going to see carried on for quite some time. And again, I'm afraid that those in power, certainly in the Obama administration, are deeply wedded to this aggressive progressive ideology.
And something that really fuels the fire of this is the demonization of conservative Christian and Jewish groups. So you have the SPLC, which once did important work in exposing real hate groups, now branding the Family Research Council a hate group. They have me on their list of new leaders of the radical right with people like heads of the Black Panthers and former Grand Wizards of the Knights of the Ku Klux Klan. Then you have gay activist Peter Tatchell in England putting out a secular manifesto and saying that secularism has to stand up against, and then he lists groups, Boko Haram, Al-Qaeda, the Taliban, ISIS, and then what he would refer to as right-wing or the religious right in Europe and America, which would include conservative Christians, conservative Jews. He even mentions ultra-Orthodox Jews in Israel. So here we're all getting put in the same in the same basket here. So if I say that marriage is the union of a man and woman, I say it with compassion, I say it with truth, I'm just like ISIS. And this really is a battle of secularism against Judeo-Christian values. And they have to demonize. And it's just part of the tactic, isn't it?
Yeah, it sure is. What's more, you know, the position that you and I hold on marriage is exactly the position that Barack Obama held, or at least claimed to hold, when he ran for president. So it's really something that suddenly in a few short years, this position is now being deemed illegitimate. But what you're seeing here is a real effort to stigmatize the moral beliefs of traditional religious believers as though they're somehow irrational or beyond the pale. And it's not done through reasoned argument. The stigmatization is done through attacks and insults.
So how would you recommend that we combat this? We've just got a couple minutes, but you're doing what you're doing, and I want to make sure folks get your website before we're done. But what are the most effective things just your average man on the street can do to combat this ideological war against our values?
Well, I think the most important thing is to appeal to what we call classical liberal values embedded in our American tradition, the notion that people of goodwill can and will disagree on a whole range of matters, that these are matters to be worked out in our country largely through democratic processes, that we aim to persuade each other and deal with each other peacefully and respectfully. And then I think it's also essential just to call people's attention to this broader battle that I mentioned between the progressive ideology and this classic American tradition, because if people are really looking carefully to see where we're headed, it's a very dangerous place, it's a place that will have a very narrow understanding of what freedom is, a place that's very contrary to what this country has so long celebrated.
And from my perspective, Ed, the bullying is backfiring because we tend to side with the victim in America and oppose the bully. And we also love our freedoms. So to me, as we expose that which attacks freedoms and that which is bullying, and we do it in a gracious, civil way, that those that oppose our values will overplay their hands, and hence a situation like Houston. Ed, what's the best way for people to connect with the work that you're doing?
Well, our website is eppc.org. That's the Essex Public Policy Center.org. So I invite your listeners to check us out, follow our work. A lot of us write and blog a whole host of different places. I think once you see some of the names on our website, you'll recognize many of us.
Yes, eppc.org. And Ed, I always love seeing your quotes and those of your colleagues because they're clear-headed, and I read them, I say exactly right. So keep up the great work. We all need you doing what you're doing.
Thank you. You too.
All right. I am about to go over to South Africa. So, Bertie, hang in there. We've got a break. And as soon as we come back from the break, I do want to speak with you. In fact, you got a name that stands out. And I'm almost sure that somewhere along the line, on Facebook. I mean, I interact with, it could be one of 100 or one of 1,000 on Facebook just because of time and the amount of traffic that's there. But didn't we interact about grace or something like that? So anyway, when I saw the name, I said, absolutely. So we got a break. This way we'll get a few minutes to talk. Stay right there. We'll go to South Africa right after the break. Go to my website, Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org. Check out the latest articles. If you missed my interview with Sid Roth, what a powerful interview. And Sid's powerful testimony. You can click on latest video and you'll actually hear it there. Watch my response, my video response to former President Clinton. Also by going to AskDrBrown.org, clicking on latest video. We'll be right back.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back to The Line of Fire, 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to the phones over in Cape Town, South Africa. I was supposed to be in Cape Town next May, but had to reschedule. Birdie, welcome to The Line of Fire.
Thank you.
Did we interact briefly on Facebook? Did that happen, or is that my imagination?
Oh no, we did. We were speaking a little bit about grace when you just brought that book out on. I think it's Hyper Grace.
Yes, sir.
And then I did say some things, you know, about grace on your page. You know, since I'll be seen as a grace preacher.
Uh-huh. So if you don't mind, how about if we just take a minute on that subject? Is that all right?
Yeah, we can.
Yeah, so do you believe, we both believe God saves us freely by his grace. It's a gift, can't be earned in a million years. And if you pray a million hours a day, God's not going to love you more. I think that's clear that we both agree on that. But do you believe God requires anything of us as believers, that when he saves us, that he calls us to obedience and that he requires things of us?
Yeah, I do believe that God does require something of us. He requires of us to believe and trust that he can bring forth life in us.
Mm-hmm.
I do believe that God, whatever would be required of a normal relationship between a husband and a wife, I believe is required because, I mean, relationships started in God, you know, from the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
He's a Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. And inside that relationship, what's needed is things like having knowledge of the other person, seeing the personality of the other person, and then to a point that you can believe and trust in him. And I find like in a normal marriage, you know, when like my wife and I mean, we've been married now for 20 years, and I find a lot of who she is basically, or just who she shaped my life. And what was needed in that relationship was trust and belief. And that could only be possible once an environment is created where a person can actually trust and believe in the other person. And for lack of a better word, the love of God is so contagious that the moment you are in that atmosphere and you can really believe upon it and see yourself united into that, created in the image and likeness of God, it will naturally flow forth in your life.
Mm. Yeah, I'm totally with you on everything flowing out of personal relationship with God, 100%.
Yeah.
Legalism is externally imposed religion. It's laws without love. Let's say you're preaching through 1 Peter, and 1 Peter says, because he who called you is holy, so be holy in all your conduct and past the time of your sojourning here in reverential fear. We recognize that our relationship with God, although it has analogies of, you know, Father, Son, we are his children, and husband, wife, that he's still a holy God to be revered, and we are called to be holy in all of our conduct. Would you be able to preach that just as plainly as
I
would? That, right, so,
well,
got it.
I don't think I will preach it in the way you will preach it.
Uh-huh.
I will always preach it. I can preach on any text in the Bible because I do believe that the Bible is inspired. So what I would say is I will always use holy conduct as in the light of a fruit. So because the Bible says the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, long-suffering, kindness, meekness, temperance, faithfulness, and all those kind of things. So even in Peter, it says there, those who do these things has forgotten that they were cleansed. So it's got something to do with what he actually believes. And the bad deeds in the life is a fruit of a certain belief. So I will say, if I must preach in my church, say I preach, for instance, on giving, or I preach on holy life, I would say, listen, let us be reminded of who we really are and what the highest quality of life is. And let us see ourselves united with God in that holiness. For, I mean, just the word holy means to be separated, you know, to be set apart.
Mm-hmm.
And we have been set apart for the highest quality of life that's contained in God. And we know that we can never attain to that quality of life unless God himself comes and lives it in us. So let us put our focus on what Christ has done for us, and then from there have a hopeful expectation for Christ to bring it forth and make our members available for the Holy Spirit to manifest it in our lives. But I will never preach and say, listen, this is what the Bible says, you better start to do it. Because if a person could have done it by just looking right at the Scripture, I mean, why would we need Christ?
Right, but you don't think I preach it like that, do you?
Well, I must say, I haven't listened to a lot of your stuff, but if I look at your page, you know, it comes over, if I must just from my side be honest, it just comes over as if there is a bit of a thing of, listen, get your act together and start to live right. You know?
Yeah, you know, I tell you, though, I bet if you just started reading any of 30 or 40 or 50 or 100 passages in the New Testament, just started reading them, you'd be able to say the exact same thing. It sounds like Paul's just saying, get your life in order. Or James is just saying, get your life in order. Or Peter's just saying, get your life in order. So in other words, you have to contextualize it. But that's why it's important that we hear everything people have to say. That's why I write whole books. That's why you preach whole messages, you know. But the key thing is, the hypergrace folks say that the moment you're saved, you are already completely holy. You're totally sanctified and perfect and can add to that. I mean, I've got numerous quotes like that in my book. Whereas I would say the moment you're saved, you're set apart as holy to God. Now by his power, he calls you to live a holy life. So I would hope we're in harmony on that.
I think if we can just, I can comment on that. When we talk about where the Bible says, without holiness, no one will see God. In the Afrikaans, my native language, it actually says, this way, it says, without bringing forth holiness, you know, heiligmaking is the Afrikaans word there. What it actually means is, and the way I see it is, that God, through the sacrifice, has sanctified us. The Bible says that he purchased us with his blood. His blood washed away my sins. If we look at the Lamb of God, did he take away the sin of the world, or did he not take away the sin of the world? But because Christ has done that, we can now have access to freedom from sin through a belief wherein we see ourselves fully united with God and where we see ourselves free from the power of sin.
And then we act on that, right? We act on that belief because we live in this world, right? In other words, we don't just believe it. We believe it. We receive that reality. Now we act on it. Hey, stay right there. If you still want to talk about the issue that you initially called on, and you can stick around a couple more minutes, this next hour I start, I'll bring you on immediately. If you'd rather not pursue that now, then, hey, maybe we can chat another day, all right? So Betsy's going to come on. You just tell her if you want to stay on a couple more minutes, and we'll continue the conversation. If not, great at least having this initial dialogue. Friends, go to the website, askdrbrown.org. Take advantage of the special resource offer, only a few more days to do that. My bottom line today, yes, we can mix grace and truth. Yes, compassion and conviction go hand in hand. Don't be moved from either. We've been telling you the bullying is backfiring. Now we've got more proof.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
All right, the big, big pressing questions we cannot ignore. We're being confronted with them in city after city. We're being confronted with them in the courts. We're being confronted with them in the schools. We're being confronted with them in the place of business. Everywhere I go, people asking these questions. As just the last hour, someone wants to know, is it right for a pastor to attend his son's, quote, wedding if the son is marrying another man? Or must you say, I have to do what's right, even if it's going to offend? When we are dealing with the massive social issues that we face in our society today, can we address the social issues with clarity? And we must. We're not given a choice. We have to address them. While at the same time reaching out with compassion to individuals. If we speak out, say, against radical Islam and want America to deal rightly with radical Islamic terrorists, can we do that while at the same time trying to reach our non-radical Muslim neighbor? How do we bring grace and truth together in this way? 866-34-TRUTH. If you haven't heard the news from Houston, Mayor Parker has now removed the subpoenas that were unjustly and wrongly sent out to five Houston pastors demanding that they turn over sermons, and then that word sermon was dropped, but speeches, communications, emails to the congregation addressing a number of issues, including gender identity and homosexual practice. It was egregious. It was a witch hunt. Unfortunately, Mayor Parker, lesbian activist mayor, has not said that what she did was wrong, that the subpoenas were wrong, or that they intruded on religious freedoms, but rather, that it wasn't good for the city of Houston. All right, so I address these issues on the air. At the same time, I'm flying on a plane, talking to a gay passenger next to me, meet someone, interact with them, want to talk about the gospel. Can we do both at the same time? The end of last hour, I was having a conversation with a pastor in South Africa, Bertie Brits. We were talking about grace for a bit, but Bertie, thanks for holding on through the break. We're going to have another break in a little while, but you feel we can speak the truth, reach out in love at the same time. Give me your perspective, sir.
Yeah, I've got people close to me that is homosexual, and I've reached out to homosexuals, like we're just saying, you know, sitting on a plane or riding in a bus or meeting with people. I just found some basic points that just makes the way we approach a homosexual, or a gay person, much more effective. I think it will be impossible for any person to, when he's corrected, to feel, just to feel happy all the time, because the Bible does say correction is not pleasurable, because from your heart you believe things, and when you correct the heart, it's the deepest part of a person. And you will always find that it is difficult. But what I do believe and what I've seen what help is, I just said to the Lord, Lord, when I see a homosexual or when I see a person that would commit a sin that people would mostly say is a gross sin or a taboo in the world, Lord, I want to see him in his sin the way you saw mankind when they were in their sin. And there was something compelling you, such a love compelling you that you want to give your son. And to say, Lord, I want to feel that compassion. I want to feel that in my heart to the point that I'm almost, like the word agape, it comes from a Hebrew word agab, which means to breathe after. Even talks about a sensual love,
Stay right there. I want you to finish your comments. We got one more break to hold through. But I'm totally with you in asking God for his heart. I always start there. People say, what do we do? How do I respond? I said, you ask God for a broken heart of compassion. All right, we'll be right back.
It's fire we want, for fire we please. Stand in the fire.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
I want to continue this discussion. In a little while, we're going to talk to actor Kevin Sorbo about his appearance as John Calvin on the compelling docudrama Let the Lion Roar. But the question is, if we stand for righteousness in society, if we stand for marriage as God intended it, if we stand against gay activist efforts to redefine marriage or to impose that on believers, can we do that graciously and civilly, while at the same time not driving away those who identify as LGBT? Can we speak the truth to all people and at the same time do it with compassion? Just want to grab a couple more minutes with Bertie Britz, a pastor in Cape Town, South Africa. End of the last hour, we were talking about grace. And by the way, we could have another discussion about the derivation of agape and agapao, and does that go back to Hebrew? Yeah. That's another discussion. But the larger point you wanted to make was, if we have God's heart for someone, that we can speak the truth, even corrective truth, and it can be done in a way that's life-giving as opposed to destructive. So why don't you finish your thought, please?
Yeah, I'm just going to have two short points. You know, the first thing that I see, for instance, if that compassion is really in the person's heart, say for a person that's homosexual, I think we will veer away from joking about homosexuality.
Yes, sir.
Because, you know, and I found, you know, even on your page, for instance, some jokes about homosexuals. You know, things, I don't say this was on your page, but a typical thing is people would say God made Adam and Eve and not Adam and Steve, and that kind of thing. And a person that is homosexual, if we look at him and we see that person the way we would see our own child that is kidnapped or lost, we would
or gay,
get away from
or that identifies person. As gay, or if it was our own kid who identified as gay. Right.
As gay. I mean, you would really feel something. You would not joke about that because you have got such a love for that person. I remember I was doing evangelism close to Lake Malawi. It was in the southern parts of Mozambique. And one day I saw a group of people standing next to the road. And I stopped to see what was going on. I thought somebody got hit by a car. And when I stopped there, I saw there was a naked man that was insane. You know, he lost his mind. And the kids and the people were mocking him. And they were, you know, mocking him, and then as he tries to beat up the one, and the other start to mock, and he's just in the circle of mockery. And as I was looking at that, you know, I asked myself the question, I wonder on whose side insanity really is, on the side of the mocker or on the side of the person that's naked in the middle. You know, and I just think that we need to veer away from those kind of things. Paul clearly states that a human being is a valuable person, and then it's a valuable thing. And then sin came and took the person captive. And I think if we can speak to a person, doesn't matter what his sin is, to see him basically as a victim of something that has taken him captive, and give him a message that can give him enough self-worth and enough love that he can actually say, but maybe I can be something else, you know, than what I'm experiencing in my life, you know. And that's basically the points, you know, that I've got.
Yeah, I appreciate that. And by the way, you know, on our Facebook page, we can reach as many as 10 million people in a week. Right now, I'm just looking, 500,000 people engaged on the page, and 67,000 comments in the last 7 days. And sometimes it's much higher than that. And we don't have the ability, we have a profanity filter that blocks out any profane comments, but I'm sure there are comments. Every so often I'll look and see things and just start pulling comments that are inappropriate. And we posted a scripture about Jesus being the light of the world the other day, and the next thing I see this heated discussion about the Pope, and the Pope is satanic, and this is not about the Pope. But I mean, that's just happened to be ones I saw, or the couple other staff members that look at these things. I will address a social issue, and I've used a cartoon to do it. Like last week, there was a picture of two men, Marriage Today, And then the next one, Marriage Tomorrow, and it was three men, and then it said we're cousins. It's a cartoon. It's a biting cartoon. But in fact, all these things are happening with social advocates fighting for these things. But I listen, I would, if anyone has ever heard me speak and address the issues, especially from the pulpit, I'm always speaking as if there's someone in the front row that identifies as gay or lesbian, and there's a parent there whose kid has just come out as gay. So the, and I have on numerous occasions publicly apologized for the failings of the church in this regard. And, you know, Bertie, there's a woman that used to be with Focus on the Family, and I participated in some conferences with her addressing some of these related issues. I only knew her as a believer, godly woman, very sweet, very ladylike, full of the Spirit, just a gracious, kind-hearted woman. She came to our area, part of a conference, so we had her share her testimony at my home congregation. When she finished, I don't remember this happening before or after, but she got a spontaneous standing ovation for her testimony. But the biggest thing is she put up a picture at one point. She put up a picture of how she looked before she was saved, living as a lesbian in relationship with another woman. She was much heavier. She was smoking a cigarette. Just these little outward things. It was kind of your stereotype of what a butch lesbian would look like, and this very off-putting look, like I wouldn't even talk to her. And yet, God saw something more. I just preached on that this past Sunday in Chicago, that we need to see past where a person is, whoever they are, and see what God can do in their lives. So in that regard, sir, amen. I appreciate
it so much.
Yep. Listen, because I remembered our interaction on Facebook and because you're calling from South Africa, I wanted to take as much time to have a conversation with you. Have you ever read my Hyper Grace book?
I did, but you know, I've read many books in the meantime as well.
So no. That's
remember everything.
No, that's fine. I just wanted to make sure you did read it. Hey, keep lifting up Jesus, and it's great to have this conversation with you. God bless you.
Thank you so much. God bless.
All right. Well, great to have that extended conversation with South Africa. And the question again that we have been asking is simply this. Can we stand for social righteousness? Can we take stands on controversial moral issues? Can we be staunchly pro-life while at the same time reaching out to women who've had abortions? The answer must be yes. One group may be more called than another group to do this. However, all of us must stand for what is right while reaching out with love and compassion to those we differ with. Last week, we began speaking with Christian actor Kevin Sorbo. You may have seen him as Hercules or in many other roles, and unfortunately got cut off. So we've just got a few minutes to finish our conversation today. Hey, Kevin, thanks so much for rejoining us today.
I was in the mountains out here in L.A., and I was actually heading to a charity event, and we got cut off in the mountains. So.
Oh, yeah. Well, thanks for making the effort to get back on with us. Hey, I've just got two questions for you. But first, what's it like to play a role? How much do you throw yourself into that person and have to kind of figure out how you want to convey them? Because most of us are not professional actors. How do you do that?
Well, you know, it always comes down to the written word. I think the writers always have the toughest job in Hollywood. So I give a script 20 pages. For me, if it holds my interest, then I want to do it. If it doesn't hold my interest for whatever reasons, and it could be any reason, I just say no to it. But they have the toughest job, and I've had some wonderful scripts come my way. I've been very fortunate to be, you know, offered the roles, and I've actually started another one coming up here in next week. I leave for Louisiana, Baton Rouge, Louisiana. I'll be there for a month. And I'm shooting a movie called Caged. It's a three-part movie, and it deals with human trafficking. It's a very heavy subject. I'm playing two different parts in it, so I'm looking forward to that challenge.
Can you tell us the parts that you're playing in it, or is that premature?
I'm playing twin brothers, and they're estranged from each other. And they it's the good brother and it's the bad brother. It's kind of a Cain and Abel type of story that deals with that. But it's got a lot of wonderful characters. And it does deal with a subject that a lot of people, I think, they heard of it, they know of it, they just don't realize how bad the child trafficking, the teenage trafficking is out of America, of girls being drugged and kidnapped and thrown overseas into these horrible conditions where they're raped on a daily basis.
It is horrific, Kevin, and I'm thrilled to know about an important movie coming out on the subject. A number of our grads in our ministry school are actively involved in combating human trafficking here in America and in Europe and in Asia as well. All right, we come back. I want to ask Kevin what it was like to play John Calvin, and then we'll talk about his important role in God's Not Dead. So we'll be right back, got a few more minutes, with actor Kevin Sorbo, who is standing as a witness for the gospel and conveying that message to many through Hollywood. We'll be right back.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
I'm joined by actor Kevin Sorbo. You've seen him in one role or another over the years. And again, that's the power of acting and the power of Hollywood. It can be used for good or for bad. And it's always so wonderful to see someone saying, God, use me to make an impact for good. Use me to get a constructive message out. Kevin, on the docudrama Let the Lion Roar, you played the role of John Calvin. Now, obviously, it's a smaller part as there are different people that phase in and out on this docudrama. But what was that like to play the role of John Calvin and even to see that he uttered some anti-Semitic words over the years?
Yeah, it was actually kind of surprising to me. I grew up in a Lutheran church in Minnesota. I'm a Norwegian descent here, and that was sort of typical for a lot of Scandinavians that... And I had no idea. I certainly knew about Calvin, certainly knew about Luther, but I had no idea that both of them were such anti-Semites. It was a very educational script for me to read. And that's what this documentary is all about. It's really about trying to get the Bible back to where it was, because as much as they were, in a positive way, promoting church and growth all through Europe, they were also very negative in their viewpoints towards Israel and the Jews. And I had no idea about that. And there was a bit of rewriting in the Bible that went on. And this whole documentary is the attempt at what they're trying to do, is sort of get the Bible back to where it was supposed to be.
Yeah, even certain words that are translated certain ways. For example, the Greek word for synagogue, synagoges, is always in the New Testament translates synagogue, except in one place, and that's the book of James, who is actually Jacob. And in the second chapter there, that Greek word is just called the meeting place. Because, well, Christians wouldn't meet in the synagogue. Oh, no, but these were Jewish believers in Jesus. So, of course, their meeting place was called the synagogue, because that's where Jews met. In other words, Jews didn't stop being Jews when they followed Jesus. But the church lost sight of that, especially Martin Luther with his horrific words against the Jewish people towards the end of his life. So, Kevin, you feel it's important for the church to recover its roots and to fix what it got wrong along the way?
Well, I think it's going to be interesting for people to view the documentary and make their own opinions. I mean, you know, you look at religions through the years. I mean, there's all kinds of things that happen in terms of, the Bible's being translated this way or that way, and I think it happens probably in every religion out there. I mean, it certainly happens in our government, doesn't it? I mean, look at we got people we elect to office there that are rewriting the Constitution as we speak. So it's an interesting world we live in, and people like to rewrite history, and I think that's a lot of times why history repeats itself, because people don't read history anymore. So we tend to go down those same roads, which isn't always a good thing.
Yeah, I mean, you raise a great point, though, about the Constitution, because that is something that is relatively recent, and we can trace things back, what the Founding Fathers meant and intended and how they lived, and that gets radically revised, rewritten, differently understood today. How much more can we do that with the ancient scriptures? Kevin, I got an email from my sister-in-law. She met a Jewish woman who came to faith in Jesus by watching God Is Not Dead. And then I heard from my 13-year-old granddaughter, she'd go see that movie over and over again. So it's quite a range of people. Are you getting reports about the movie impacting folks?
Oh, yeah. I mean, this is, you know, I knew we had a good product here. I knew while I was shooting it, I said, this is really a wonderful story. It's going to create a lot of great discussion, which is great. Every movie creates discussion of some kind. I just don't think PureFlix or myself realized how big this was going to be, because it's the number one independent movie by far this year in Hollywood. It's the number one movie dollar for dollar in Hollywood. It's a $2 million budget. It made $65 million in box office in America alone.
Wow.
It's still being shown all over the world. It just opened out in South America. I think there are a few Catholics down there in Brazil and Argentina. And so it's just done amazing. I get stopped every day. I mean, granted, Hercules and Andromeda were two long-running series for me. People stop me for those roles, but for the last 3-4 months, I get stopped every day at the grocery store, post office, at the gym. Doesn't really matter. People come up and say, "Hey, love God's Not Dead. Please make more movies like that." So it's amazing to see the response from people.
Yeah, how absolutely wonderful! And we know again the power of cinema for good or for bad. Last question for you, Kevin. Why do you think then that Hollywood will keep pumping out movies, some big, big budget movies, sometimes with a really destructive message or gratuitous violence or just an immoral message, and the movies don't make that much, and then a well-done, clean, conservative movie comes out, or a child's movie comes out, and it seems to make more? You wonder, obviously people want to make money, but sometimes it seems there's ideology driving things even more. So in the midst of that, are you pessimistic about where Hollywood's going, or are you optimistic?
I'm optimistic about it. I think, you know, slowly starting to get it. Hollywood is great at the blockbuster thing. They're great at it. I think with Noah, they just went down the wrong road. I think they learned their lesson not to hire an atheist director to
right,
out of the
right.
Bible. And, you know, my wife calls Noah, calls it the Transformers meets Waterworld, you know. So it's just, I mean, visually it's beautiful, but to portray Noah the way you're doing it. And I'm a little concerned about what they're doing with the new Exodus movie.
Yeah.
Christian Bale came out with a statement the other day saying, you know, calling him just a schizophrenic and a crazy and all that kind of stuff. And even the director already had some negative things to say about it, and certainly showed his atheist colors as well. So I don't know. I think they get it, and I think they want to do it. It's called show business after all, so I'm sure more movies will be made like that. I've got a couple down the road that I'm making. I just did a wonderful family movie called The Secret Handshake, which will be out in theaters next probably late winter. So, you know, it's a slow tide to turn. Certainly they have an agenda, as everybody does, to sit there and get their own message across. But Hollywood's not dumb. I mean, they realize that G and PG-rated movies make the most amount of money. That's not saying, you know, I go to R-rated movies if I'm interested in it and want to see the content of it. And there's some great movies out there that are R-rated due to violence or something like that. But, you know, I think there's some wonderful things out there to be said for what Hollywood's doing. And I think they're going to pick up the slack and make more of these things, because they get it. They're starting to get it.
Yeah, I mean, it does seem that way. And if it is a matter of show business and it's a business matter, even if they're not getting it for the right reasons, God can use that and work through it. But Kevin, really appreciate the work that you've done and the excellence with which you have done it, and your brief role as John Calvin. We are now promoting that on Let the Lion Roar. So thanks so much. And you probably get 9 million things sent you a week, but you'll get a book I wrote called Our Hands Are Stained with Blood that talks about the tragic history of anti-Semitism in church history. If the docudrama Open Your Eyes, this will go hands in hand with it. So if you happen to get it, it ever gets to you, it's from me, but I'll sign it anyway, just in case. And thanks again for joining us on the air.
My pleasure. And another movie from God's Not Dead, same company. Check out this movie called What If. It's on DVD. It's on Netflix. People will love it. It's not as heavy as God's Not Dead, but wonderful, and it's got a wonderful message, and you'll enjoy it.
Awesome. I didn't know about it. Thank you. What If? We'll do it. Thanks so much, Kevin.
You'll recognize a lot of faces in that one. It's just, I'm visited by an angel to show the world that I should have gone down on.
All right. What If? We'll watch it. Thanks again, Kevin.
Thank you.
All right, friends. So Kevin, with all of the major movies he's been in and the series and all of this, he appears as John Calvin on the docudrama Let the Lion Roar. Stephen Baldwin appears on it as well. Other actors you'd know, you'll see Jackie Velasquez, hear her voice and that. And people like Paul Wilbur, John Bernis, and Sid Roth. Sid appears as a Jew en route to in the concentration camp, the Holocaust, in the outfit. It was moving for him to do it. So remember, we've just got a few more days for you to place your order. The DVD, the Blu-ray disc, the book that comes with it, and all of these interviews, including the one I just did with Kevin Sorbo on CD, we'll be sending them out to you. Call 1-800-278-9978. Only $40 postage paid for everything. 1-800-278-9978, or order straight from the website, AskDrBrown.org.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome, welcome to The Line of Fire, 866-348-7884. Okay, did you hear the news from Houston? I'll repeat it again. The bullying is backfiring, just as the attempted boycott of Chick-fil-A ended up instead with a Chick-fil-A day called for by former Governor Mike Huckabee, which ended up with long lines of people waiting to get into Chick-fil-A to say, "We're standing with you." The outcry over the suspension of Phil Robertson of Duck Dynasty for his comments, and he suspended him and then quickly reinstated him. Obviously, a lot of egg on their face to do that, but the outcry was great. Now here, the Houston pastors, the Houston Five, an overreaching witch hunt by the city attorney David Feldman and lesbian activist Mayor Anise Parker, subpoening these pastors, telling them they had to turn over sermons, and then they removed the word sermon, speeches, presentations, emails, other forms of communication to their congregants that addressed issues of homosexuality, gender identity, among other subjects, branded shocking and shameful actions by Senator Ted Cruz and others, calling them inquisition, witch hunt, abuse of government power, and on, reckless. I mean, these are from leading attorneys and others blasting the mayor for her actions. Well, she has now removed the subpoenas, but ridiculously, as reported today, the requests, she didn't remove them because the requests, the subpoenas, were in any way illegal or intended to intrude on religious liberties. Oh, no. Rather because they were not serving the city of Houston. So this is a real lame response. But the positive is that the subpoenas have been removed. And for those of you who wondered why we have been saying for years that gay activism is the principal threat to freedom of religion, speech, and conscience, here's your answer. Because it is. And the great challenge is how to stand for righteousness, how to stand for the social issues while at the same time not offending and driving away your average person who identifies as gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender, who is not an activist, who is basically saying live and let live. You have your freedoms and rights. I just want the same freedoms and rights. You have your marriage and family. I want to be able to do the same thing. And just don't mess with my life. Let me live my life. That'd be the average person that we're dealing with. They're not an activist, not part of an activist organization. But when we stand against the activists, your average gay person would think, well, you hate me. At least that's what many of them are told, that we hate them. So the balance of grace and truth, very, very critical, very, very important. Out of hearts of love for God, out of hearts of sensitivity towards others, at the same time we stand up for what's right. As I've said many a time before, we need backbones of steel, and we need hearts of compassion. Can we have both at the same time? I say absolutely, without a doubt. If you want to comment on that, I will take some calls. I discussed it more in the first hour. Again, the word in my heart is reach out and resist. Reach out to the people with compassion, resist the agenda with courage, because I do the latter. I am widely hated and maligned, so be it. It's for righteousness. But that's not going to stop me from building relationships and reaching out and interacting in every way I can. We come back. Let's talk about Ebola. Are we doing enough to stand against the potential of a plague coming to our nation? Obviously, we care about other nations that have been affected by this in years past and now in recent days. Should we quarantine our borders? Should we say no one from certain nations who is potentially infected just because they're in that nation can come in to our country until the crisis is solved? What do you say?
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown. God of burning,
cleansing flame. I want to talk to you about Ebola. We have not discussed this at length on the broadcast. We have talked about it in terms of fear and people saying, oh no, what's coming, and how we have to have an attitude of confidence and trust in God. We use wisdom as much as we know how. We use wisdom. There was a time when I was invited to speak in Liberia right in the midst of civil war. The civil war had begun, and what I was told was, I'll be able to get in the country. They're not sure I'll be able to get out. Yeah, that was the word. And I prayed, and I felt the Spirit of God say to me, travel at your own risk. In other words, if you go, something could happen to you. And I knew at that point I was not supposed to go. And total chaos broke out. Total chaos broke out shortly after I would have been there, and I would not have been able to get out for some time, or something worse could have happened. So we use wisdom. Just reading a report here that Australia becomes the first nation, developed nation, to ban travel from Ebola-hit countries. This is on Yahoo News. Australia becomes the first developed country on Tuesday, became the first developed country on Tuesday to shut its borders to citizens of the country's worst hit by the West African Ebola outbreak, a move those states said stigmatized healthy people would make it harder to fight the disease. So Australia puts out a ban on visas for citizens of Sierra Leone, Liberia, and Guinea. and they say, look, we can't take a risk, someone coming in. And they say, yeah, but come on, come on. That what about all the healthy people? What about all the other people? What about the needs of these people that they may have for healthy people to travel to Australia? On the flip side, there are countries within Africa who have been banning travel from one country in Africa to another country in Africa because of Ebola. Are we doing enough? Are borders too porous? Should we be quarantining whole countries, saying you cannot come in from this country to America simply because there's the possibility that a non-healthy person would get in and you could have a plague that kills thousands and thousands and thousands? 866-34-TRUTH. And this is how you deal with epidemics and plagues: quarantine. Clip number 21, this is a report from the Washington Times.
Foreign aid workers who have Ebola could get care from U.S. hospitals. A sensitive internal State Department document lays out plans for waiving travel laws and admitting the patients into the country. It says the U.S. has an obligation to accept Ebola-infected foreigners who are part of the aid effort.
All right. So rather than quarantining, we're saying if we have aid workers in these countries and they are now victims of Ebola, that we should bring them into America to treat them. That's certainly a compassionate thing to do, without question. Is it the right thing to do? Do we have sufficient mechanisms in place to guarantee that in bringing the person in for treatment or the people in for treatment, that it will not spread infection? Can we be absolutely sure of that? 866-34-TRUTH. Let's listen to what President Obama had to say. Joey, we'll go to clip 14 next. This was his weekly address at the White House. So on October 25th, President Obama.
So the point is that this disease can be contained. It will be defeated. Progress is possible. But we're going to have to stay vigilant. And we've got to make sure that we're working together. We have to keep leading the global response. America cannot look like it is shying away because other people are watching what we do.
Yeah, many others are watching what we do. Were those words of empty optimism and confidence? Were those words of, hey, we got everything under control when we don't? Or were those words of wisdom? The president continues, clip number 15, again from October 25th at the White House weekly briefing.
We got to make sure that those workers who are willing and able and dedicated to go over there in a really tough job, that they're applauded, thanked, and supported. And we can make sure that when they come back, they are being monitored in a prudent fashion. But we want to make sure that we understand that they are doing God's work over there.
Yeah, now, not surprisingly, Michael Savage, no stranger from controversy or stranger to controversy, said they don't know Ebola from Shinola. He noted that nearly every African government has restricted travel from the three West African nations where Ebola originated. The outbreak originated. He said, I suspect they are run by racists. I think King Lear Obama should send Eric Holder to Africa as he has to Ferguson, Missouri. Okay, this is typical Michael Savage language and style, which would be different than mine. But he points out that Togo, Gabon, Ivory Coast, Senegal, Rwanda, Chad, South Sudan, Namibia, Angola, South Africa, Botswana, Congo, Lesotho, Equatorial Guinea, Kenya, Madagascar are on the list of African nations that have banned travel into the Ebola-stricken countries of Liberia, Sierra Leone, and Guinea. Should we be doing the same? Let's listen to this discussion on CNN. We'll continue with the clips number 16. Joey, this is Amber Vinson, a nurse. It's about her in terms of centers of disease control, in terms of are aid workers being properly tracked? Do we understand what's going on? Discussion on CNN, number 16.
At the bridal shop, it was just another day until news broke Wednesday that her customer tested positive for Ebola after helping care for a victim who died in Dallas.
What did you think when you heard about that?
Actually, I was just a little surprised that it, you know, came this close to home.
Yonker called the Summit County Health Department right away. She said they were understanding, but didn't sound ready to give her the advice she needed. She was the one who suggested closing her store as a precaution.
I said, what kind of sign do I put on my door? Because I don't want to cause panic either, but how do I let my customers know that I'm closing just in case, just until we get a little more information?
And what did they say?
They said, oh, okay, sure, that would be a good idea.
Yeah, let me re-explain that background there. This is a shop owner who found out that a nurse that now has Ebola, shopped there. How should she respond? And one more clip from CNN, number 17. The discussion continues.
I feel like they should have instantly given us, like, okay, your staff needs to go home. You know, everybody under quarantine, you know, just come up with something right away. Instead, they made us feel like, okay, we'll take your names down, go business as usual.
A few hours later, Yonker says the health department called again, now promising to bring her a thermometer for taking her temperature twice a day for 21 days.
I'm just confused on if this is as serious as it is. Why is this being handled in a non-serious way to me?
All right. Is our government really tracking this? Is our government adequately tracking this? Excuse me. Think of this, and then I'm going to go to the phones, 866-348-7884. Think of this. You have a fire drill with kids in elementary school, right? And all of us can be just like little kids, and if people around us panic, we panic. If they're calm, we're more calm, even as adults. So you have kids in elementary school, fire drill, right? Okay, kids, everybody just line up. All right, boys and girls get lined up. Okay, you ready? Now just walk out the room, just follow me, and we're going to have our other teacher behind us. Okay, good. Let's walk fast. Let's, everybody good, no running, and everybody's smiling. And now it's an actual fire, And the teacher does the exact same thing. Now, everybody knows they have to get out of the building. Everybody knows it's dangerous. They have to get out of the building quickly, but they communicate in such a way that doesn't get everybody panicking. They don't say, hey, no problem. Hey, yeah, finish your lesson, then 5-10 minutes, we'll get out. No, you got to get out now. It's dangerous. But they don't go, oh, fire, fire, we're all going to die. They don't do that either. So the deal is this, very simply. I believe the government can be very comprehensive and super cautious and even overdo the caution by saying, listen, we don't think that there is a problem, but we must be 100% sure. So here's what we need everyone to do. And you do it in a calm way. We've got it under control, and we're being super careful, super cautious. No reason to panic unless you see X, Y, Z symptoms. At that point, you do this. Are we sending out a clear message? Do people even know what to do? All right, straight to the calls. We come back, 866-348-7884.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
You know, I want to play one more clip, and that's clip number 18. This is a discussion yesterday on PBS about Ebola. But just a question, in America, do you think we're handling this the right way? Do you think we should be having more vigilant quarantine? Do you think we're adequately tracking things? And is it right that we don't tend to care about epidemics if they happen in other parts of the world, epidemics if they happen to other people? And we could have one person in America affected and perhaps the idea that many others could be affected or infected. And that would trouble us. But if thousands and thousands die in another country in Africa, it tends not to trouble us. Just questions to ask. Let's go to clip number 18 on PBS.
Overall, the World Health Organization estimates 10,000 people have been infected there. But the head of the UN Ebola mission warned today the true number could be far higher. Anthony Banbury told the Associated Press, unfortunately, we don't have good data from a lot of areas. We don't know exactly what's happening.
You know, here's my most fundamental issue. Aside from the fact that as followers of Jesus, we need not be fearful. As followers of Jesus, we put our trust in the living God. We commit our lives to Him. We act wisely. We know there are consequences for acting and living unwisely. We know that certain patterns of behavior are destructive. We know there are certain things we could do that are reckless that could endanger us. But otherwise, we entrust ourselves to God, and we entrust Him to keep us safe. And we entrust Him to take us through difficult situations. And we put our lives in His hands. So if there's a plague or not a plague, our attitude should be the same. If there's a crisis or not a crisis, our attitude should be the same. I have watched people who have been steady for decades through all kinds of storms. I have watched people steady through terrible sickness and loss, terrible financial crisis, relational crisis. But they've loved the Lord, they've been stable, individuals, families, because of their roots that go down deep in God. So whether it's radical Islam, whether it's Ebola, my hope is not in the government or the military, my hope is in the living God. My question in this regard, and I'll give my answer to the question I've been posing, I do not feel confident about our government's ability to handle this now. We're a big country. We have porous borders. We've lost track of people. We let people in America years back that were known to be radical Muslims or Muslims with terrorist sympathies. We let them in the country with the strategy being we will track them, and in tracking them, they will be doing intelligence work for us without them knowing it. We'll track their movements. We'll track their communications because we know who they are. And this will now open the door for us to have better intelligence and know what Muslim terrorists are doing. And then at a certain point, our administration said, we can't track them anymore. So we let them in the country, and now we can't track them. Wonderful. We know how porous our borders are in Mexico and people that can easily get through the borders. Who is the one guy, I forget his name, but he got dressed up so as to look like Osama bin Laden. I mean, the turban, the whole look, so as to look like Osama bin Laden. And he successfully crossed the border into America from Mexico at least once, if not twice, if my memory serves me right. So I just don't have the utmost confidence. Do I believe if we completely quarantined against certain nations coming into our country now, anyone from that nation coming into our country, that we could actually do that with rigorous passport control and things? Yeah, I think we could. Is that what we should be doing? That's another discussion to be had. But in terms of how we handled the initial case, the gentleman who tragically died, who never should have gotten into the country, was that handled properly? No. Did people understand the right protocol? The hospital seemed to say lacking instructions or lacking of implementation of instructions, and hence others that are contagious. And then how does it, do we even know 100% sure how it spreads? How long you can have the infection without showing symptoms? Do we clearly understand it? Does the nation clearly understand it? I haven't heard clarity on it, to be candid. So, that being said, I do not have a lot of confidence in the way that we are handling this, and we should be praying for wisdom. We should be praying for our government to have wisdom. We should be praying for people to act with both righteousness and compassion. I'm changing subjects 100%. Joey, go to clip number 3. I've just got time to play this for you. Earlier, we had on Kevin Sorbo. We talked about playing John Calvin in the docudrama Let the Lion Roar. I want you to hear what Sid Roth had to say. It may sound like an extreme statement, but it's not exaggerated at all. Clip number 3, Sid Roth speaking.
A lot of people think the reason there's been so much anti-Semitism in the church for the past 2,000 years is because Jesus came through the Jewish people. And the devil's upset with the Jewish people because Jesus came. Well, they're partially correct, but there's something much more at stake. You see, according to Amos, the 9th chapter, God says in the last days, he will restore the tabernacle of David. The word tabernacle in the Hebrew means house or family. In the last days, God will restore the family of David, the Jewish people. And he says, when that occurs, we will have a great Gentile revival. But not just a great Gentile revival, because Amos then describes what he sees with his eyes. He doesn't understand it, but it is the greatest harvest of souls in the history of the world. That's what's at stake, the salvation of the world.
Well, friends, I agree with that, that Gentiles provoking Jews to salvation, the fullness of the Gentiles coming in, Jewish faith in Jesus the Messiah will be the greatest revival the world has ever seen and will usher in the return of the King and lead to the resurrection of the dead. Yes, the righteous dead being raised because of Jewish faith in Jesus, provoked by the fullness of the Gentiles. Get the docudrama, Let the Lion Roar. You'll hear Sid Roth's voice on it. You'll see Kevin Sorbo as John Calvin. You'll come face to face with a compelling docudrama with the horrible history of anti-Semitism in the church and God's great purposes for Israel. The Blu-ray disc, the DVD, the exclusive CD interviews, and the book. Go to AskDrBrown.org, AskDrBrown.org. Order there. My bottom line today, friends, let's combine grace and truth. Let's walk in love to those we differ with without compromising our convictions and ends.